Hello, this is Ruslan Malinovsky.
Hello, this is Roman Yaremchuk.
Hello, I'm Sergey Rebro.
And you're listening to Ukraine Plus Football.
Football never officially ends. On Wednesday of last week, the 23-24 season officially closed as the under-23 side bowed out of the Olympics at the group stages. Before that exit, though, the 24-25 campaign had already begun in earnest with Ukrainian representation in European competitions. Two clubs have already ended their Conference League campaigns. And that all came before this past weekend when the new UPL season bowled into action. We've been away for a few weeks, but we're finally back. Ukraine Plus Football is ready to digest and preview the lot. Here's to the new season. Now, before we dive into that new season, let's take a couple of minutes just to look back at the under-19s and under-23s summer campaigns. Andrew, you seem to be everywhere, almost like a boomerang. How was it? Painful, I would imagine.
It was painful because, ironically, however you want to put it, I actually missed the games where we won or scored anything. So That was a big shame. I decided to go to 2-0 draws in Northern Ireland for the under-19 Euros. Missed the final group game because it was, you know, travel reasons and all that kind of thing, which Ukraine won 3-2, of course. And then the semi-final that they lost, unluckily, I would say, 1-0 to France in a very even game, where Dmytro Mykhailenko's team put in a very good performance, all in all. Just the story of the summer that I think we've spoken about all of our national teams, there wasn't a realisation of chances. They couldn't put the ball in the back of the net, regardless of how many chances they created. That final ball, that final pass, there was just a problem with it. And unfortunately, that's what happened in those first two matches that I saw in the 0-0s against Northern Ireland and Norway, and in that semi-final. However, the under-19 teams are officially the most successful national team of this summer campaign. They've qualified for the under-20 World Cup in Chile next summer. So now it's all good for a repeat of Alexander Petrikov's team in 2019, when the year before in the under-19 Euros, they actually lost in the semi-finals 5-0 to Portugal and then went on to win the tournament the next year. So here is a similar bit of a hopefully tempting of fate that it comes through in the next campaign. And the under-23s, the less said about that, the better, probably. We spoke in our last episode about the problems with calling players up, with Ruslan Rotan not being able to have the best squad possible available to him, because a lot of clubs didn't want to release their top players. And ultimately, I think that sort of came to fruition on the pitch, just that final bit of quality, which was lacking. Ended up seeing Ukraine shockingly, or surprisingly, however you want to put it, lose to Iraq, sort of do a bit of a repeat of the Romania fixture, beat Morocco late on after going, you know, down to 10 men and sort of pulling off a valiant one and then having that hope in that final group game. Fortunately, Ukraine lost to Argentina 2-0. They weren't that bad, all in all, in the first half against the Argentina side, who were also missing the likes of Messi and all of their good players. But they went behind early in the second half and that was it. I think that was that. The players were keen to get back to their clubs and all that kind of thing. And probably for the better, really. At least these players can actually be a bit more useful to their club teams than an extra couple more weeks in France or Paris or an extra few days, however you want to put it. But all in all, a mixed bag, but at least we're at that World Cup next season. And officially, it's the end of the Ruslan Rotan era in UAF. He's been in the job since, what, 2016-17. Finished with the under-21s last summer, finished with the under-23s now. Now he can fully focus on Alexandria.
And we'll be discussing Alexandria a little later on today. Listeners, we'd love to know, do you think Andrew would curse the teams this year, listening to that feedback? Needs to be a discussion held about that, which games we let him go to next year. Anyway, before the season began, we had the unique occurrence of a four-way playoff that finished just a few days ago to decide who would get the 16th spot in the UPL this season after the scandalous demise of the Dnipro minus one. Now, Andrew, before we jump over to Ray, can you put this into context for us and how it all came about?
So I think we mentioned previous episode and over the course of the past half end of last season that there were issues in Dnipro 1. We were all rooting for them not to make the European spots because of those rumours, the saying that there were outstanding wage payments from all the way back to January. There were other stories of players not being paid over the past year, year and a half, that had gone on loan, that had gone to other clubs that were previously under contract at Dnipro minus one. And for whatever reason, the club was being relatively silent. There was still talks that maybe they might come back from the summer break. They'll start training early July in preparation for the Conference League qualifying rounds. But what happened? There was radio silence. Nothing happened in the end. All the players ended up slowly getting picked off to different clubs in the UPL. Some of them are still free agents. Some of them are free agents previously. All in all, it was essentially a writings on the wall thing where I think it was the Friday before the Monday of the Conference League draw for the second qualifying round when it was officially ratified by UAF that Dnipro 1 would leave the UPL as a result of the fact that they had no squad. They had been kicked out of the training base they rented because their training base and the stadium, Dnipro Arena, are both owned by the state, I think, because they were repossessed after the Privat Bank stuff in 2016-17, whenever that was. And so essentially, they had no one. I think officially, they on the payroll or in the club statute, there was like three employees left. And I included like Yuri Maksimov, who himself also went, I think, when they withdrew. So obviously you can't play a season like that. But I think the biggest scandal, as you mentioned, Adam, was how late they left it. And because of that, they were included in that second qualifying round draw for the Conference League. And as a result of that, it meant that Ukraine lost that spot. Because literally hours later, I don't even know why UEFA did it, but hours later, UEFA then published that Dnipro 1 would have to be withdrawn from the competitions because of what, you know, the reasonings that they have, that they've got no squad and all that kind of thing. And that Puskás Akademia, who are sadly got very close ties to Viktor Orban, would get a free bye into the third qualifying round. So, you know, kicking the teeth when you're down and you feel, if anything, really sorry for Ruch, who I think possibly could have put in an all right shift in that second qualifying round at a bare minimum, just given Ukraine some points in the coefficients, because at the moment it's pretty depressing and Ukraine are dropping each season. I think UAF, as a result of that UEFA draw and everything that's happened with Dnipro 1, have raised a request with UEFA to be able to withdraw Dnipro 1 from the total Ukraine sides in that are representing Ukraine in UEFA competitions this year. So it means that Ukraine's coefficient will be divided by 4 instead of 5, which if it was divided by five, would make it even worse. So UEFA did not allow Ukraine to replace the Pro One, but they are considering that other thing. So we'll have to wait and see, and hopefully have some updates once that does occur, because it will be a huge help to us after, you know, Dnipro 1 just stinking the place out and just being selfish bastards, really. I think there's no other way of putting it. Going down and then trying to bring everyone else down with them. And I think that's been the story of their whole existence, really. A fake club, no fans, just the play toy of a disgraced former ghost alleged owner who's now in prison. That funding and all of that stuff seemingly has dried up as a result of Ihor Kolomoisky, the alleged ghost owner, being in prison for now for almost the past year. However, I think they still got their professional status intact. And Ihor Tsahanek says that he's not ruling out from his sources that they could return to Druga Liga next year if they somehow get their act together and get a squad together and all that kind of thing. Fingers crossed, though, that they don't, because really are a disgrace of a football club, and shouldn't be, especially what they've done this year, not paying all the players and staff and doing this to UEFA coefficients of Ukraine, especially at this such a crucial time when war is so bad and affecting it so badly, that just get rid of them. And they should be banned from ever competing ever again, even if it's Dnipro minus two, Dnipro 19, whatever, 08, or whatever they come out as, you know, all that kind of rubbish, just get them gone.
Right. Now, I've got my thoughts on this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this situation. As Andrew detailed the sorry tale very well, but who do you hold culpable for this big fiasco that has resulted in Livy Barret joining the UPL just a few days before the new campaign began?
First of all, I would blame the media. It's probably an odd answer, an odd opinion from me, but a weird one. But yeah, that's the coverage of that team. I mean, look, they had the fierce propaganda from Football Hub and those channels, whatever the names are, Union 2+2. They had studios, they had been selling their players throughout, even Tato Take, I think. So all these YouTube shows, they all covered this team, and it didn't deserve it. So same as Zorya right now, but we're going to talk about Zorya later. I think Zorya is next after that team, because it's basically the club doesn't exist for anybody except the president. So while you cover those teams, I mean, remember, Adam, me and you were not mentioning, try not to mention even the name of this team, and we were right eventually. That's why it's just, yeah, Dovbyk came from Dnipro 1, which is a surprise. And a few other players are also quite decent who came out from this squad, which also took part in the European competitions the previous seasons, which is also an anomaly. But overall, we just have to set our focus on the correct teams and correct leagues. Now we have the coverage of Cup of Ukraine, of the lowest divisions, lowest but not the poorest, as I would put that. It's a good thing, and we just need to avoid that monopoly in the Ukrainian football media, because remember, we had Dynamo monopoly for years and nobody cared about regional football. Like, if you remember the old press, the Ukrainian football press, they all focused on Dynamo. Then it was Shakhtar. Then, of course, it continued by the inertia. And I think now the inertia is running out.
I think a couple of questions need to be answered by the UAF on why they didn't act a lot earlier on the issue. They still were having their conferences back in June and ratifications on other teams joining the Druga Liga and the like, but they didn't bother fixing this issue. And we also have to look at UEFA in this case as well. UEFA hand out licenses to take part in their competitions, and they've handed out a license to a club that hadn't paid wages for the previous 6 months. The players who were financially in trouble were not expected to participate this season. So something somewhere has gone on there for them to have even been included in the draw. We've seen teams year on year be banned from Europe for financial irregularities, which was the fake club of the Dnipros, Emma. And they still somehow ended up in that draw. And I would like to know how, personally, how on earth that happened. But that club no longer exists. There is no need to tarnish the airways with any more discussion of such filth. And we can look on to what potentially is a more exciting UPL season, especially in the top of the table. Andrew, you've been looking at the teams in particular. Dinamo seem to have really took a few steps forward over the summer.
Yeah, I think that's the surprise of the summer, if anything. Who thought that Dinamo Kiev would be the feel-good factor of Ukrainian football at the start of this campaign? But they have been. Obviously, they have just recently beaten Partizan Belgrade 9-2 on aggregate after a absolutely unbelievable first leg in Lublin, where Dinamo will be playing their European football this season. 6-2 in that first leg. A load of different scorers. Partizan, I think we have to admit, were absolutely atrocious and shocking. Yes, they still scored two goals, but I think that's a bit to do with some of Dinamo's suspect defending, which they still have got their problems. But from the base of midfield going forwards, that's where they look really good and sharp. And yes, as we mentioned, they had the added motivation that Partizan were playing tournaments in Moscow and all that kind of thing. So it sort of added the ante ahead of this tie, and potentially the added motivation, you know, added to the fact that let's score as many goals as possible, let's punish these guys as best as we can. But it still looks like they are fresh, rejuvenated, look happy on the pitch. Like they're scoring these goals and they look positive. They look refreshingly not depressing, as we have come accustomed to over the past few years, especially over the Luchescu era. And as we've mentioned, let's not get it wrong. This is the first season without Luchescu that Dinamo have had in, what, 3-4 years? So now this is, from the very start, Sasha, a.k.a. Shovkovsky's chance to start from anew. And this is his era that has begun. And, I mean, it's got underway pretty well, which I think we'll know a bit more about this Dinamo team, certainly after these Rangers matches. They've got Rangers in the next round, who themselves have had quite a poor pre-season. I think they've lost a load of games. They lost to League One side Birmingham City a couple of weeks ago. They've also drawn their opening Scottish Premiership match 0-0 against Hearts. So they're in a semi-bit of a crisis, whereas Dinamo are coming into this a lot more confident, which makes a difference from the past few seasons where Dinamo have very much been the underdogs going into most of their European qualifiers. So let's see if they're able to deal with that new statement that they might be the favourites going into this one. But I just want to add, Dinamo have probably also had one of their best transfer windows thus far in maybe 5 years, 8 years, I don't know, ever since, you know, the Belhanda, Jermaine Lenz and all that lot came in. I genuinely think this is probably their best window since then. And that was, when was that? That was like 2014. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's part of a decade. And they've not broke the bank per se, but they've brought in players that are ready to make an impact immediately in the team and that have been playing well before joining. So I think the main one that has impressed from the very off, Oleksandr Pikhalyonok. Of course, he's been linked in recent years with, you know, going to Girona and all that kind of stuff. Whether that was true or not, who knows? But he chose Dynamo. And I think he is a ready-made replacement for an aging Vitali Buyatski. And I think it sort of gives the lifts the weight off Buyatski's shoulders, who, whilst he is still a very key player in the team, I think that there's a chance for him now to be released. And maybe he can go on his kind of swan song European move that Cedric Chuk was given last season. Maybe, you know, he might go to a Belgium or somewhere else where he can just have a change of scenery after being with Dynamo for so long. But it also means that they're no longer reliant on him, because Pikhalyonok, he offers those passes. Great at contributing goals as well. It was really good off the bench in the first leg. Came on, was spraying passes, got an assist, got a goal. And then in the second leg, he started, where Dynamo went without Volodymyr Brashko, without holding midfielder, and still comfortably got past Partizan. And then you add into that two players returning from the Olympic squad, and these are two of the players that probably impressed the most. Braharu, that can play left, right wing, left back, right back. So he's kind of the new Karavayev. And he looks really good. He was probably one of the standout players in that group stage game. That was relatively disappointing. And Valentin Rupczynski, also arriving from Dnipro 1, offering a bit more dynamism in midfield. So, for example, if Dynamo were to part ways with a Shaparenko, for example, I think Rupczynski might be a ready-made replacement there. And then on top of that, you get in Brian Ceballos, who caused a bit of controversy because he wasn't the right height when he arrived in Ukraine. There was the wrong height on Transfermarkt, and then someone didn't obviously look into that properly. So instead of actually signing him permanently, they've got him on loan until the winter break, and then they'll see if they want to keep him or not. But he apparently impressed in pre-season, so fingers crossed he might be able to make an appearance at some point soon, because during those Partizan matches, Maxim Diachuk hurt his shoulder, and he's going to be out for a while because of surgery and that kind of thing. And as a result of that, we don't want Christian Bilovar, who is one of the worst defenders ever, playing in the middle there, alongside Popov, who himself has got, you know, a bit of liability to go. And on top of that, just want to add one more thing, Taras Mahavko. We talked about the under-19s earlier. We'll be talking a bit about some of the other players that are being linked with moves away from Ukraine a bit later on. But Taras Mahavko, probably one of my most impressive players from that tournament, really looks like a really solid defender. Maybe not at the level of a Zabarny at his age, but certainly hoping that he gets a lot more minutes this season for Dynamo. And he should be able to hopefully make that centre-back position his own, if needed. He just certainly does need to put on a bit more size, I think, to fully make that effective. But yeah, genuinely, we can't talk about the UPL just yet because Dynamo haven't played any UPL games. I think the next two match days, this match day one and match day two, they're not taking part. And who knows if they'll take part in three or four if they get through further. But for the time being, I think that they will take Shakhtar a lot closer this season, and I've already predicted them to potentially win the title, as I have done over the past two seasons, which means they won't do it. But yeah, anyway, I think that's a pretty good summary of Dynamo so far. Overly optimistic. I think we've never been able to say that in the whole time we've been doing this pod. Let's see if that actually comes through and they can, you know, reply with some actions on the pitch.
Fingers crossed. Has Shakhtar done anything this summer that has perhaps pushed Dynamo further forward in the thought process, Andrew, or is it that just Dynamo have took so many steps forward?
Yeah, I think it's more that Dynamo have moved up to equal Shakhtar, for example, Whereas Shakhtar haven't really progressed further than what they have been over the past season, past two seasons. They have brought in a number of signings. Kirill Offisyon from Kolos, who was obviously one of the goalkeepers of the season last year. The only question is will he be getting much game time with Dmytro Riznik equally being a very good goalkeeper? And it's like, how are they going to ensure that both of them are adequately, you know, kept in line? Because obviously there were rumours that Fission could go somewhere in Europe or something, and he opted for Shakhtar, and they paid like 3 million for him, which is, I guess, a big fee for a Ukrainian player coming from a like of a Kolos. So that'll be interesting to see how he fares. Vinicius, Tobias and Pedrinha are back, returning players who have been on loan for the past 2 years. Vinicius, Tobias at Real Madrid B, Pedrinho back in Brazil. Neither of them really catching the eye of, I think, the clubs that they were at, hence why they are back. I think, if we're going to be perfectly honest, but a good chance for both of them to maybe reignite their career. Because remember, Pedrinho arrived at Shakhtar for 17 million euros. That was bloody massive. And that was only, what, the summer of 2021. Played 6 months and then left. So now let's see if he really is going to be able to show something. Because Zubkov can be good on his day, but, you know, we know that he lacks that final ball a lot of the time. So maybe Pedrinho might offer some welcome competition on that right wing position. They've also brought in Franjic on loan, I think, from Wolfsburg. He's a central defensive midfielder, Croatian. Not been the most impressive, I think, of the past few seasons for Wolfsburg, and then he was on loan somewhere else in Germany. And it makes it even more ironic that actually against Vorskla in this opening match day, where they won 5-0, they actually played without a central defensive midfielder, where obviously the past season or so, especially since Marina Pusic came in, he started playing Kriskiv there a lot. Kriskiv's just returned from the Olympics. He was on the bench. Stepanenko, I think, is on his way out in terms of career. I think Shakhtar are very much prepping for life after him. He's been on the bench for this opening fixture. I think he probably will be spending a lot of time there himself. And also, a few of the other players will be going on loan elsewhere. Tsukhanov, who I think was, there's a lot of hopes for him from the under-19s. He's going to Chornomorets apparently soon. Ocheretko, one of Adam's favourite players, he's going to Karpaty Lviv on loan at some stage soon, apparently, according to Tata Tuker. So we'll see what happens. Surdakov is still there. I think the 150 million euro release clause didn't do too many favours, if that actually exists or if it's just hearsay or whatever, because I guess an indifferent second half of the season, that Euros when no one really caught the eye massively, Surdakov wasn't terrible, but he wasn't amazing. Now I think it's going to be all on him, if he does stay beyond this window, to sort of make a name for himself again in the Champions League, which is all he can do, really. And I think that certainly in his first half of the season, Shakhtar will be having heavy focus on that Champions League. That maybe it might have some effects on their league campaign. There'll probably be a lot of carried over matches, not just for them, but whoever does make it to the group stages, Dinamo most likely, because even if they lose against Rangers, I think they fall into the Europa League, either into the playoffs or directly into the group stage. And if
into, it is the group into the playoffs, stage.
So they'll be there. And then we've got Krivbas, who we're going to be touching on shortly, who are also in Europa League qualifying as well.
Definitely. So it's going to be an interesting opening start season. Ray, we've listened there. Obviously, Shakhtar not quite as exciting this summer with their transfer dealings as Dinamo. Do you see a more exciting top of the table this year? And also, whilst we're discussing it, do you see Krivbas making it the same top three as it was during last season, or maybe Krivbas going to fall away a bit?
Yeah, I announced it in our last podcast in the end of the season, of the previous season in UPL, that Kiribati is not going to jump higher than that. And I always obviously predict them sixth spot, so out of top five anyway. And my top five includes two Lviv teams, both of them, and LNZ. Because LNZ is just, you know, I like this club the most last season. And this year they have this Barcelona ex-coach. Hilarious. I mean, I don't know. It makes me laugh somehow, but why not? Let's see what they can show us in these first games, because their games, the game was postponed. And yeah, that's my top five. So Kiribati is out of it, and Shakhtar is going to be the champ. I believe so. I mean, we can touch on their new kits. They're all completely orange these days with a weird design. It reminds me of a phone booth telephone wire going down, whatever that means. And they also have Ukrainian flag kit, which is just blue and yellow. Bit weird, if you ask me, but I mean, Dinamo did the same thing. So, of course, they had to do the same thing. And to be honest, top two teams are the least exciting teams for me this season.
Yeah, the rest of the top five does look like a good discussion to have, though. I mean, last season, Plisia, Ruk finished the top five out. Andrew, obviously, as you mentioned earlier, Plisia have already departed the Conference League before the UPL began. And now just have league to focus on. Seems to have been a change in Jitomir this summer. Would am I right there, Mr. Todos? Ruk as well, though, afterwards. I think we'll have to come to you, Ray, there, taking Oblon's goal scorer. And what do you think they'll do with him up front next season? First of all, Jitomir.
Jitomir is going to be interesting to see. Like, Polisia all change, as you mentioned, Adam. New club logo. They've had a rebrand. It's going more towards their wolf branding, that they essentially are this pack of wolves. New kits with wolf ears on them. Alexander Usyk has essentially re-signed as a player, or stayed on as a player. Been taking part in training sessions, but sadly not in match day squads, which ironically possibly could have helped out from a footballing perspective. Especially when we look at those matches that they lost to Olympia, 2-0 and then 3-1. The 5-1 loss on aggregate. Not the best start to Imad Ashouri's surprise tenure as manager. I think when we spoke about this maybe a couple of pod episodes ago, when he was first announced, that it was all a bit of a shock because he was Dnipro 1 under-19 manager. And he never really had any senior experience. But yes, he's been to Aspire Academy in Qatar, which is, I think, highly reputable in terms of coaching. He's one of the founders of PAS. And there's a lot of high hopes for him and his backroom staff. However, thus far, I guess it hasn't worked out just yet. What can we put it down to? I don't know, after just two matches, but maybe it's just the chemistry and all that kind of stuff isn't there yet, because they've brought in a whole load of new players this summer as well. A few players from Georgia, a few Europeans, one player from Olympia, Bosnian striker. Benny Makuana's still been out. He's still been recovering from injury, not fully back yet. And his creativity is something that I think is really lacking in the team. And defensively, they look pretty problematic, to be honest. So they brought in Bez Korovajni from Kiribati. He got injured, I think, in his second or third day of training. And he's out for ages with like a knee or a leg problem, which is a big shame. And on top of that, Edward Sarapi, who's arrived, obviously ex-Dnipro 1. He comes in to sort of plug that gap, where I think whilst Bez Korovajni is unavailable. And Sarapi had quite a shocker against Olympia, especially in the second leg. And we have to wait and see how they do in the UPL. Of course, I guess the UPL is going to be easier, in inverted commas, than European opponents are, regardless of who they are. But there's a lot of pressure now on Imad Ashour to get the results, because I think the owner of Polisia, he's invested a lot of money in all of this. There's expectation that they will, you know, finish very high in the league again this year, not scraping on the last day for a European spot. And on top of that, actually win the cup, which they failed to do, obviously, last season, which I think was their main goal as well. So if those results aren't going to be seen, I think, come Christmas time, maybe Ashour's time might run out. It will be interesting to see how much patience Henadi Butkevich has, especially with the fact that Kyle Vincent left in the way that he did last year, just randomly in the middle of the second half of the season, and then them sort of collapsing all the way. So it's going to be interesting. I think that, contrary to what Ray says, I think Rivas will still keep up the momentum in the league. They've got Victoria Pilsen in the Europa League third qualifying round this week, where they'll be playing in Košice, the home leg, and then next week away in Czech Republic. Let's see how they get in there, because I think I saw one of those football ranking Twitter accounts saying that they've only got a 9% chance of qualifying from, you know, however they work it out, they're only giving them 9%. But there is the fallback of the Conference League playoffs, and, you know, seeing how that goes. And I think a league phase from a Yuri Vernadub team wouldn't be too bad. And having three teams in European group league phases would be a very big positive for the coefficient.
Funnily enough, I just had a look back at my predictions. I've got Kyrgyzstan finishing fifth, behind Polisia this year. Rook, though, Ray, I have finishing fourth above them.
Rook is promising team year after year. Like, all the hopes are in this team. They have a good owner. They're in the most comfortable city of Ukrainian football these days. And, of course, they have to finish top five. I predicted that Krasnopyr will be a best goal scorer, and I hope he will. I mean, that would be a good image, and that's something you would like to see, because this is a very Ukrainian team as well. A lot of, like, academy players, youngsters. Also, in terms of the calendar, they have a good start, and their match was also postponed, so we cannot really discuss them right now. But the one team that you should be looking out for. And just to add on, to finish off top five, although I predicted Shakhtar being a champion earlier, I really count on Dinamo getting the third star. It would be just fun.
Now, as we move into the middle of the pack, lots of interesting stories popping up here and there. Ray, earlier you mentioned LNZ as one of your favourite teams. What is it about them that really attracts you?
They jumped up the table the first season. They got promoted, and they're a very authentic team. They have sponsorship from a plant. They're quite agricultural. They're from Cherkasy, which is a very picturesque town, and very Ukrainian as well. And they have the sponsors, which, like, bring me back to my childhood, like the Zolotisty Chipsy, whatever. if you guys ever heard of them. So yeah, that's a good team. But also, I included somehow this season I'm quite clear about my expectations of UPL. You know, I know which teams I like. So I like Veres. I like Inhulets, surprisingly, pretty much the same reasons why I like LNZ, but also because they're anti everything. Like, Inhulets is anti everything, anti marketing, anti football. Aesthetics, anti.
I just thought anti football.
Well, no, because they had Lupashko, and Lupashko apparently made his name in Hunyhulet. So, same as Mladen Bartulic, who also worked there previously. So, he's now in Zorya. So, well, we'll see. But I put them in the mid table. After them, I put Obolon. It's a very romantic choice. Call me nuts, but I mean, it. Of course, when you say that Dinamo is going to be the champions and you're overly excited about it, nothing matches that prediction. Like, Obolon being 10th by the end of the season is insane. I agree. And then we, 9th, sorry. And then we have Livy Bere right after Obolon. I believe in them. It would be cool to have two teams who are, you know, fighting for who's going to be the, I don't know. Well, to be fair, Livy Bere represents the whole left coast of Dnipro River, right? So it's not only like Kyiv. It could be much bigger brand. Why not? And of course, finishing off the mid-table, I see Alexandria and Polisa. Polisa finishing 12th, like against all odds, because it's funny how you change the order of the letters in the word investment that way that you can avoid the real meaning of that word, which is ripoff for Butkevich.
Andrew, earlier you mentioned about Ruslan Rotan's time at UEFA is over. First time in 8 years, he's not going to be involved with the national teams. He can focus on what was one of his three or four or five jobs he had about 18 months ago, Alexandria. How are they shaping up? Can we see a return to the Alexandria of old, or would it be more mid to bottom table nothingness?
I think we'll find out in the opening few months of the season, because obviously Rotan has not been there for the duration of pre-season, which is not a help because he's been with the Olympic team. So I guess his assistants have been doing the work there. But they've got a good squad on paper, all in all. They've brought in a bit of experience this summer in terms of transfers. They've had a few returning loanees come back. Artur Avagimyan, who was really good for Chonna Moritz last year, he's back in the Alexandria team. They've brought in Alexander Filipov from Dnipro 1, of course, as I think a running theme of this episode is that Dnipro 1 squad has now filtered out throughout the entire UPL. And he's going to bring in goals, which I think is something that they've actually been lacking, and a bit of experience in the team, because last year they've had a lot of youngsters. They had all these, a few loanees from Shakhtar, you know, Suheyev was playing there, Shuransky's playing there. And there's not that experience that you want to, you know, get grit and fight in those matches that you need to get points or wins in. And then you've also got Artem Shabanov at the back, who was pretty good for Polisia last year. And it was a bit surprising that he left. And ironically, they've now got problems defensively after losing Shabanov or letting him go as a free agent. And now he's at Alexandria. And I think that both of those players will be key to whether Rotany has a successful campaign. So that's going to be good from the very start. Whether they can persist with it, I think, is another matter. I think they'll be probably comfortably mid-table, realistically, just from what we've seen over the past couple of years from Lortain, despite the fact that, yes, like you say, he's now no longer got any other additional distractions. But I think this is probably the moment where we see whether he is going to be a good club manager at the very least, whether he can instill this stuff into his team, whether he can push on now after a cup. After last season was very disappointing. The season before that wasn't that bad, I think, in the end. So it's can he actually do it now when it matters? And speaking of some of the other mid-table teams that Ray just touched upon, Zorya, I think they will probably be improved on last season. They had a terrible first half of the campaign. They weren't that great in Europe either. And they had all those managerial changes and it was all just crazy. Well, they've stuck with the same guy now. And I think that they'll probably be stable, as their first win of the season showed against Inhalet. They got it over the line. From that, they've brought in a few loans from Dinamo, primarily. One is Oleg Husiev, the Ukrainian legend's son, Oleksiy, who impressed me at the under-19 Euros. So it'd be good to see him get some pro senior football minutes. Benito has arrived from Dinamo after, you know, being a bit part player over the past 3 or 4 years. And they've kept most of their other key talents, including Guerrero for now, who's been linked with like Dinamo, moves abroad for the majority of the season, but he is there. So that'll be interesting. And Yatik has signed another season loan with Zoria, and he got a goal. He got the winner in the first game of the season and also an assist. So I think he might have a bit of a breakthrough. So it'd be interesting to follow how he gets on, especially with the success of Brashko there 2 seasons ago. And yeah, and then in and around them, Kolos Pozdeev, given the go-ahead from the very off, got that draw against Obolon in the opening game of the season. Defensively, they look problematic, in all honesty, especially after the last campaign when that was the best thing about them. They were drawing 0-0 all the time. They were keeping all the clean sheets in the league. Then Pozdeev arrived and it all fell apart. Fasun's gone. A big loss from a goalkeeper perspective. Whether they'll be able to match anyone with his quality is another thing. But they have strengthened in attack and in midfield. And I think that that will actually be quite interesting to see how well they do with some of the talent. So Ihor Haratin is back in Ukraine after years abroad with Ferencváros, with Alehia, with Dats in Slovakia. So it's going to be interesting to see whether he can adapt again to Ukrainian football well or not. You've also got, they've signed Nika Gagnidze, who I think was quite a good player in the Georgian League over the past few years. Vladislav Valetin, who's been there for a few years, he actually served in the Ukrainian armed forces for a couple of months in the first year of the war. He was in the territorial defense, and then he was shipped out to the front line for a few months. And he revealed that actually recently in an interview. And he was actually quite good for the under 21s or under 23s in the Maurice Ravello tournament. So I'm expecting him to maybe push on this season for Kolos. And then on top of that, they've also signed Ali Ferenko, who's been really good for Zoria over the past few years, but obviously was shut out for the last 6 months of his deal because he didn't want to sign a new contract. And Maxim Tretyakov, who's had really bad injuries over the past few seasons, but he's finally been given another chance. So let's see if he can push on, because he's always been a promising attacking player, both at Dnipro 1, when he was at Alexandria before that. Let's see if he can, you know, reignite his flailing career as well.
One of the interesting stories for me this summer was when Vorskla tried to renew their 2018 rivalry with Sporting Lisbon. It's got to have been the bizarrest thing that has happened over there. Who was right? Who was wrong? And were Vorskla trying to mask over the loss of Stepanyuk's goals with him returning home to Rivne this summer? Ray, what did you make of it all?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Considering that Sporting surprisingly launched this new kit for the new season, not for the previous one, which would be the case for most Ukrainian teams. To be fair, the second kit of Vorskla represents last year's Atletico, and it's the only authentic kit they have, because the design from Sporting, they have a copy, the replica kit, which is like not the best version. But still, it was a huge scandal, and they made waves throughout social medias and all the football kits related websites, which is a good thing to see, honestly, because it's like, I mean, you have to do the marketing any way you can. And I think this, to be fair, this would be the only silver lining for Vorskla this season, because I honestly don't understand what this club is for anymore. You know, in Poltava itself, people don't really care about this club. I mean, they have a huge stadium. It's never packed. Never, ever in the last 5 years, I'm pretty sure. And I think now is the time for them to actually fight for relegation in playoffs. I put them in 12th position or even 13th because I don't understand them. Honestly, I always liked that team. I have to be honest, all the way to back to Pavlov's years. and winning the cup, and they won. They were in the finals of the cup, and nothing, nothing. There is no response, no feedback. I think the guys, controversially, they just play for money. And yeah, this is the case in most Ukrainian teams. Like I mentioned, Dovbyk, he became a star in the team that was a phantom. But with Vorskla, it's time. It's just time. Same with Kolos. Kolos is a presidential club. Kolos is the club. Well, we won't miss it. As you said, Andrew, they lost their only essence, which all the Ukrainian clubs from lower divisions aspired to previously, is to be this club from a small town in the UPL and providing the only football they know. The, you know, I don't know what's the name of it, but it's not the most exciting one. And they don't even have it now, which is even worse.
So I'd actually just like to add there about Vorskla. The kit controversy got so deep that Sporting got involved and started like getting in contact with Nike, and nothing official has come out of Vorskla that they won't be using that kit, but they deleted those posts about the Sporting kit, and we've not seen or heard about any of it since. So there are some real collector's items somewhere in some cupboard in the Oleksiy Butovsky Stadium. However, I think that Ray's been a bit harsh on Vorskla. They've got quite a good support. They've got a fair good ultra movement. And I've been there a few times over the past couple of years, and they've still got all right support even when the stadiums were closed. But I agree, and I think the fans agree, that the stadium is way too big for them. So there's been loads of this talk that they should move to the Lokomotiv Stadium in the city, or whatever it's called, where I think FC Poltava play. And there's also talk of potentially building a brand new stadium or something like that. So I don't know the reality of that, but regardless, that I think is something that has been brought up over the past few weeks, which ironically I feel is unlikely because of the owner of Vorskla, evidently still, I think, under criminal investigation and all that kind of thing. So what could possibly come from that from a financial perspective? But worth mentioning that they've actually got still quite a solid team. That when you look at it on paper, you think, actually, it's not a surprise that they made the cup final last year, and they're not that bad. They've brought in a few players from Chornomorets. They've also been, I guess, been able to keep on some of the other players that they've had. But I agree with Ray. I think it's going to be lower bottom half of the table for them, just on the basis of them being able to, you know, continue. Because think about it, Skripnik, when he was there, even he struggled with getting something good out of this team. And if anything, now it's going to be even harder. And Dolhansky is far from, you know, an experienced coach or anything. Maybe I think he might even still be the acting head coach, or maybe he's been given it permanently. I don't even remember that new story being something. So I think that says it all. It's sort of seemed like a team in transition, or sort of just waiting for something to happen rather than actually fully acting on it. So I think because of the owner stuff and everything that's going on, it might be a bit of a unstable, inconsistent season, sadly.
Now, maybe it's wrong, but we always seem to leave the worst for last. And it's on to those who we think are probably going to be battling the drop. Verizrivna, Beryl, is probably a good place to start. Managed to stay up after the playoff battle earlier this summer for another shot at UPL glory. Ray, do you see anything better for them this year?
I put them seventh. I put them seventh, and I have high hopes for them. I think they're stable. I think they have the support of the community. I mean, to be fair, Poltava also has a traditional fan base, but Veres is capitalizing it. They're struggling. Yes, they're clumsy. They have their own issues, but they have this young sporting director, the former player, Yuri Habovda. He's been making right moves so far. So I don't see them relegating. The team which I see relegating, apart from Zorya, which I already mentioned, is Chernomorets, because they're shady. I don't understand who their owner is. The return of Babic, who is deeply loved by Football UA commentators, the website, Football UA website commentators. It goes way back into history, and you should check it out, guys, if you understand Ukrainian. But it's just unclear, and it's a shame for such a great city to be handling circumstances like that. It's been a long time coming. We had high hopes for Hirochuk, but he's nowhere to be seen anymore. So yeah, those guys need to reconsider.
Now, for me, you mentioned earlier about Ingolets being a club that you like, being anti-everything. With the change of management and Lupashko taking his team to Lviv, to Karpaty, I worry for them this year. I really do. I worry how they're going to get on. It was interesting going into this first UPL weekend, and we were making our predictions beforehand. And I have to say, even though I expect Zorya not to do so well this year, I had them as a solid win against Ingolets. I struggled to see where their points are going to come from this year. For me, they were down there alongside Chernomorets at the bottom. It's when I look through the 16 teams, Chernomorets is the team that seems to get discussed the least. Nobody seems to know what's going on, and nothing seems to happen. It may be that just before the end of September, there'll be a whole bunch of foreigners coming in that will have no idea where they've come from. But at this stage, they're for me, they're a big worry. Let's save Karpaty to the end, because it'll be nice to have a good chat about them. But Lviv Ray. Andrew Ray, obviously, just before the outbreak of the full-scale invasion, we had Oleg Yegorov on to dive deep into Lviv Ray and tell us all about the project and the hope for them to get to the UPL. It was great to send him our congratulations on Wednesday, and obviously they're all very happy over on the left bank with the new stadium since then and everything else. Going back to what we alluded to earlier, the late notice, do you see them showing any signs of being able to compete? Or is it a case of get to the winter break, see where they are and battle on from there? Because there's definitely a desire for success, I think. But Andrew, what are your thoughts on Lviv Ray?
Yeah, I think that's very accurate, Adam. And I agree. I think we are all very happy to see them make it through. And honestly, they deserve it. They're a very well-run club. It's sort of a team that you want to see in the UPL, in contrast to the likes of a Dnipro 1 that are completely sort of the anti of them. They've got a great academy. They've got, you know, a great stadium. They've got great facilities. And they've got a decent team. Yes, quality-wise, it's probably not up there in terms of a team. And I think they will be down near the bottom for the majority of it. But I'm hoping that they will be able to make it to another season, make it to winter, still in it, and then give a good fight. Whether their squad remains the same as it is now, between now and then, is another question. But you know how it is. And yeah, and I think that brings us perfectly on to the final newly promoted side that we touched on in bits during this episode, but I think it's worth getting a deep dive. And it's someone that Reyes predicted to finish third in the league this season. Third. Come straight up and somehow do it. Of course, there's no bias there of anything to do with a former Obolon player being the head coach, of course. But Ray, give us the lowdown on Karpaty. What can we expect from them? And what's been going on there this summer? Because it's been far from uneventful, let's say.
Yeah, I go all in with Lopashko, not only because he's a former Oberlin player, but because he is both the former player and the past graduate, which should cause a controversy in football within football experts community in Ukraine. But if he pulls it off, there's going to be a miracle. It sounds unrealistic, but still, it would be a massive message if it actually happens. In this summer with Markevich, it was a bit farcical because he's not getting younger and his vision is not getting better. He had some misunderstanding with the scouting department of Karpaty. I believe it's Hlib Kornienko, and he gave an ultimatum to the Karpaty bosses that it's either him or the scouts. And well, scouts prevailed and Lupashko took over. Lupashko eventually came as a under-19 manager, and he was immediately appointed as a head coach after Markevich left. Well, Markevich's vision is something that Karpaty struggled with because they didn't impress that much as many people expected in Persha last season. They promoted, yes, but obviously there was something bigger than that because Markevich, we used to praise him throughout the last 15 years as the only Ukrainian coach that can take over the national team, and it never happened, maybe for a reason. Same happened here. Karpaty, I mean, it's a bad omen for him. Like, he was in Karpaty for like 6 times throughout his career. He survived everything there. He experienced everything. So that's not the exclamation mark you would expect, but I mean, he got the promotion. Now, looking forward, Karpaty have youth. Karpaty have, of course, their bases in Lviv, the fans. Nothing should go wrong. Apart from, of course, the young coach, who is as ambitious as unpredictable.
I think all of us would agree with you there that it's great to see the Karpaty name back in the UPL after the last few years. Gents, I think we've whizzed through them rather well there. As is tradition at this time of the year, it's time to put our money where our mouth is. And who do you see as champions? Who do you see finishing bottom of the rung? And who do we see making the European places?
I'm going to put my mouth where my mouth is. Dinamo to win the league narrowly, but it will be a close one between them and Shakhtar. Shakhtar to finish second, third, Kribas again, and I think the Rukh will close off the top four, because from the end of this season, it is only four teams that make the European spots, sadly. And even if you win the UPL, you do not make the group stages automatically. So welcome to the new realities, unfortunately. Relegation zone, rock bottom in Hulets.
I'm not going to predict the first two places. I'm just going to say third, Karpaty, fourth, Ruch, fifth, LNZ. Rock bottom, Zorya.
For me, Shakhtar winning, with Dynamo second, Galicia, and Ruch rounding out the European places. In Hulets, sadly, finishing rock bottom. But as always, come May, June, or whenever we get a break from football these days, we will see how badly wrong we were. There's been a few interesting, even exciting transfers.
I think the big one, maybe the only saga of the summer for us Ukrainian football supporters, is Artem Dovbyk. He has left Girona and he has moved to Roma in Serie A. We've got another big, prolific striker playing in Italy. Hopefully he can reenact maybe Andriy Shevchenko and, you know, set that league alight there. De Rossi, the manager, really wanted him. The approach from Roma was apparently a million times better and more sort of human than Atletico. Just from top to bottom in terms of how they
brought the whole transfer together and all that kind of thing, whereas Atletico were more demanding of things and wanting everything to go their way. Well, Dovbyk is now not an Atleti player. He is a Giallorossi. So we'll all be supporting Roma now for the next season minimum. And his close competitor for the number one striker spot, or maybe his strike partner, if Rebrov wants to go for two up top, Roman Yaremchuk has also done an even more surprising move. He's moved to Olympiakos, the Conference League holders. They'll be playing in the Europa League, as will Roma. Let's see how he does there. Apparently a very good manager that they've got there and someone that can get the best out of players who may not have been playing at their best for the past few seasons. I think Yaremchuk needs somewhere fresh to get his career, club career, back underway, because he was brilliant at Ghent and it just hasn't hit the heights since. So fingers crossed he can do that. And I think finally, the biggest transfer news of the past week from Ukraine directly has been Arseniy Patakhov is leaving Zorya. They're making a bit of money on him, 2.5 million euros apparently, and he's moving to Trabzonspor in the Super League. So let's see how he does there. Hopefully it will maybe be a springboard for him somewhere else. But young player, 22-year-old centre-back, let's see how he does there. And as well as that, we've got a few under-19 rumours. So obviously, I've been heaping the praises on that squad. Lots of the team have been linked with clubs in England of late. So Hennady Sinchuk, who's probably one of the best attacking players for Ukraine during the tournament, and also during the Maurice Ravello as well. Metalist, 19-year-old, 18-year-old, right winger. He is being looked at by a whole host of scouts from clubs such as Middlesbrough, Derby, and Sunderland. But apparently the team that have been following him or looking into him since the winter break has been Leeds, and they're really keen on getting him in. And I think that with the way that FC Metalist are, especially her, if that move does come off, fair play to him. I think that could be a good and interesting one. Even if he does spend the next year or so in an academy or something, development squad, and then maybe get some loans in somewhere in League One or League Two. I think that would be interesting nonetheless than staying at Metalist down in Persia anyway. On top of that, Krapivtsov, the goalkeeper who made the official UEFA team of the tournament, is currently being linked with a whole host of unnamed English clubs. So maybe he might get a move, because he is currently a free agent after leaving Dnipro 1, as is Ramit Hajiev, who was playing as a attacking midfielder for Ukraine. He scored against someone big at the end of last season in the UPL, and he's not been too bad for Dnipro 1. So he's got a bit of first-team experience, but he's apparently being linked with Brentford, who want to bring him in on trial and see what he's about. So apparently that is currently in progress, according to Tatarskaya, saying that he's currently getting the paperwork sorted so he can come to England and do that. And then probably, if he is going to sign for Brentford immediately, it'll be a stint in the B team for the off. But he's a free agent at the moment. And fullbacks, I think, for any of these Dnipro 1 youngsters, Dynamo Kyiv.
Well, no doubt there'll be a lot more transfer saga to discuss over the forthcoming month before the window slam shut at the start of September. Over the next few weeks, we're all going to be busy enjoying the European campaigns and the UPL diving into its first few weeks. We hope you do, at home, do as well. If you haven't joined the Ukraine Plus Football Match Day Predictor, please follow the links that will be below. It'll be great to have as many of you as possible involved. And I'm pretty sure you'll all be me. And until the next time, when my embarrassment is a few more match days old, Till then, take care, stay safe, and goodbye for now. Bye-bye. Чорного коліна, поки віла всього.